David Gray, good morning.
Good morning to you.
How are you, sir? Where in the world are you?
Well, I'm actually up in Norfolk in my house on the coast. I'm just sort of putting myself back together after the rigours of the tour this year. So if you want the actual honest answer, I'm isolating because I've just had COVID.
Oh, no. That's terrible. Not good. Not good for your trade.
No. It's I've gone kind of retro. I've gone back to 2021, 22, that kind of time.
Yeah.
getting back in the groove with the masks and the hand sanitizer and everything, you know. It's been a bit weird. I've not been that ill or anything. It's just more annoying than anything else.
It's more a pain in the bum, really, isn't it?
Totally is, yeah.
Yeah. So the past and present tour, which has been garnishing absolutely phenomenal reviews, has been going really well for you. And I know that you're doing, I won't say it's necessarily a Bruce Springsteen type thing, but you are dipping into that massive back catalogue. You know, and I'm just wondering, how do you prepare the band to be ready to go through all of the albums, or drop in songs, you know, kind of at the drop of a hat?
Well, yeah, we did a very sort of rigorous rehearsal session in December. It was full on. It was as full on as anything I've ever done. But I mean, the thing is, the guys have a kind of muscle memory, I feel, of the old stuff. So I was just hoping we could kind of wake those songs up a bit. But clearly, if you're going to play that much material spread out over a tour, you're winging it, basically. If I throw a couple of songs from Sell, Sell, Sell in one night, I'm just hoping everyone remembers their lines. But it adds a certain tension and a certain joie de vivre that I think I miss when the shows are more sort of plotted out. So it's nice having the random elements. But yeah, basically, in short, we've done all the hard work in the past, and all we did was kind of rehearse a bit to wake some of the old stuff up. We put a lot of energy into learning the new material and reshaping some of the kind of classic tracks, and then just trusted to our muscle memory when it came to all that really old stuff. So it's been an amazing combination. I mean, I have to say, the tour has gone beyond my expectations or hopes of what I hoped it would be like. I wanted it to be very real, very kind of emotionally connected, and the songs emotionally contextualized. So I've been telling stories and placing the songs in a time and in my own sort of feelings and thoughts at that time. So sort of introducing things and sculpting around the albums and explaining what was going on, and then presenting like a large lump of work from, let's say, A New Day at Midnight, Life in Slow Motion, Lost Songs. So it's been an amazing thing, and I think audiences have really enjoyed the sort of deep dive, as well as obviously the hits and the new music, which has gone down phenomenally well too.
That's fantastic. What is now that you've gone back into the rehearsal mode and you've taken this tour on the road? Like, what is the album that you got most excited about bringing back to life again?
Well, I think the one that's been most neglected was A New Day at Midnight. It's a sort of awkward moment in my career, really, post White Ladder, when I really didn't know what was up and what was down in some ways. So much had happened, not just in my career, but in my life. And the tour that followed it was a kind of Being John Malkovich moment, when it was kind of, I was looking out through the eyes of somebody else in somebody else's head.
Yeah.
It was just massive gigs and massive sort of after show parties with the sort of glitterati turning up. And I felt a bit disconnected from the whole thing. So I think there's a lot of mixed emotions got bound into that record, as well as the feelings of being alive in that time. It was the kind of Gulf War, kind of Blair nonsense sort of time. It's all bound together in this little document. I haven't really gone back there very thoroughly. So I guess I've enjoyed going back and turning towards some of those songs. There's a lot of the songs on there obviously directly related to losing my dad. So that they've been getting quite a lot of attention. I'm coming up to a kind of milestone. I'm about to become as old as he was when he died.
Okay.
So he was 57 in a couple of months, and I'm just about to turn 57 at the end of this week. So it's like a, I'm not expecting to drop dead. Like, it's a significant invisible line that I'm moving through, and that's been a bit of the tour. It's been a kind of mortality trip. We've been talking a lot about what it means to be, you know, of a certain age with friends and relatives kind of disappearing, the sort of disappearing act. So just before we started the tour, my guitarist of 30-odd years, Neil McColl, got very ill. So that kind of, he couldn't come with us. So that sort of framed the tour and with this sort of sense of exactly what the songs were talking about. So it's had a kind of charge. And I think that's one of the reasons working through the songs on New Day at Midnight, it kind of worked because that sort of charge is in the air again. It's sort of 25 years since my dad died now, so nearly. It's a significant thing. These things, they fade from your thoughts, but they never go away. And this is a big milestone now, and it's kind of looming up again.
Yeah, but your dad, luckily for him and luckily for you, he did get to see a good portion of the growth of David Gray as an artist, you know?
He couldn't believe it when he first came over to Ireland and I told him what had been going on. The first gig I think he came to was at the Tivoli in Dublin. And there was like, you know, 1,200 people stuffed in there or whatever it was. And the vibe of the whole thing, people just being so into it, he was blown away by the whole thing. So he was like my biggest fan.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, he did get to see it take off, you know, and he was there at the Point Depot show and a couple of other shows on that tour in 1999. And then, you know, Glastonbury 2000, he saw that sort of, that was when we kind of hit the stratosphere, really, when everything just started to go crazy. So, yeah, he got to see the whole thing take off, which was amazing. So, yeah, I mean, you get what you're given, don't you? There you go.
Yeah.
He saw that and, you know, there's a lot of other stuff he's missed out on, but yeah, he was around for that stuff, and it was a wonderful thing.
You mentioned A New Day at Midnight. Now, that was an album in and around 2002. That was 4 years after White Ladder blew up. I mean, coming off the back of White Ladder and the like, particularly in this country, I know you're an adopted son of Ireland, and you know that. Like, this, you know, for an Englishman to hold the record of the biggest selling album over here of all time.
Crazy.
Only second to ABBA's greatest hits, I might add, which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, what was going on with you at that time? Because, you know, sometimes albums come together and there's a story behind them, or the artist is in a place where it just, the stars align sonically. And what was it about that time that gave you, like, just the lineage of hits that you had on that album?
I don't know. I mean, it was just a strange thing. It was a kind of backs against the wall moment when we made White Ladder, you know? Nothing had really worked out, and it was sort of, we had to get honest about what music could be for us, or how I could record, had I managed to capture it yet, what I wanted, and also what music should be given the frame of sound and influence that we were surrounded by in the sort of 90s. What could the music have within it? What other sounds? So we challenged everything. We had very little to work with, but in a way that was a help because we just had a limited palette. But in terms of why did the songs come out so melodic and have all these big hooks, I mean, I just don't know. I guess I was singing for my life there. It was just strange, magical time. There's the right people in the right place, and then it was the right record in the right time after that. It kind of grew, and it was just, before the age of sort of thumb work, all the sort of the internet and social media phenomena that we have now, it was a kind of true word of mouth thing that just grew and grew. So I don't know what the secret was. I had to open up entirely and leave nothing, you know. So it was a very open process. I wasn't protecting any of myself. It was all in, and hope that something happens.
And not a lot of people know this, but the iconic album cover for White Ladder was a photograph from a DJ called Donald Deneen. Did you pay him a fortune for that? I hope he did a royalties deal with you.
Everything was just kind of, here, can we use your photo? It was a bit like that.
Yeah.
So I think we tried to sort him out after the event, So it was, yeah, that was crazy. It was two photos, one stuck on top of the other. So he was doing all these Polaroids. He just got back from Barcelona. We were just finishing off recording at a friend's photography studio, and he had these photos with him. And the friend who was whose photography studio we were using to record the drums in, his wife was a graphic designer, Yumi, and she just saw the photos and sort of took. They took scans of them, and that was the album cover. That was it. You know, wow. We, at that point, we were discussing what to call the album, and we all got a bit wrecked. And there was we opened the newspaper, and there was an advert for a plate, a ceramic sort of beach plate with Meet the Beach Donkeys. It had a picture of donkeys on the beach, and someone said Meet the Beach Donkeys. That's a crazy title. And for a while, we thought, yeah. And we were all kind of like, yeah, this is deep. Yeah, Meet the Beach Donkey. And then a couple of hours later, I was like, what was that all about? It's like, no, let's just call it White Ladder, right?
Yeah.
No one will understand what that means.
That's fantastic. I love those incredible ideas at 3 a.m. in some random's kitchen.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's all gone too far, and no one can see the wood for the trees at that point.
Kabir, what was it like to be releasing music in a time when people actually bought albums?
Well, it was advantageous in terms of, you know, trying to make my little record company make sense. So, yeah, I mean, I count myself lucky to have kind of come at the tail end of the old school music industry. It still informs the way that I think about things. The game has changed entirely, but I guess bottom line is it still comes down to good music and good songs. So it's just the way that everything operates now. It's so branded, the way that people combine their talents and collab all the time. It baffles me. It's astonishing. It's just it's so fluid, I guess, in so many ways. So yeah, it was good, honest sort of. Well, we didn't have a marketing budget. We didn't have anything. We just put the record out and saw what happened. And yeah, we got to sell a few copies. So it seems remarkable now. I mean, the industry has been, you know, disfigured by the sort of removal of sales from the equation.
One of the
knock-ons is definitely the concert ticket price has gone way higher because that's where everyone needs to make their money. So, you know, to the point that even Beyonce is taking it too far, and you know she can't sell her shows out in London because they put the tickets up too high. It's interesting what people think they can get away with. So, you know, I mean, I'm a part of this market as well. I'm not discounting myself, but that's definitely been a knock-on effect. What can we make from the tour?
Well, I suppose that's the situation. But if you're asking people, you know, especially mums with kids who want to see Beyonce, and you're looking for £800 a ticket, give me a break. I mean, come off the stage, you know.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's all this kind of once in a lifetime kind of experience thing that people hype themselves up. So yeah, anyway, I mean, it didn't just start with her. It's just, this is just I think that a lot of things are struggling at the moment, you know, across the board, economically, people are having a hard time and things are biting, and it's just against that backdrop that borrowing an old credit card to go to a gig doesn't seem like a good idea.
Yeah. Something I just learned about you recently through a random Instagram post that you threw up is you're a Manchester United fan, David Gray.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, it's a troubled part of my soul. I'm going to allow you to bring it up.
Yeah,
I mean, I did go public with it. I think the reason was it feels. The whole thing feels very dark.
Yeah.
I mean, what I've been saying for a few years is we need to go down a couple of divisions, shake off the corporate rubbish, and be utterly reborn. There's something ill about the club. I've been going to see United on my dad's shoulders since I was about 3 years old. So I'd say I saw them go down. You know, I can't really remember it, but I remember kids taunting me in the playground, City fans in Manchester when I was growing up. So it was. I've seen lots of eras, but there's something very strange and sort of corporate, and I don't know. The club's basically a big family. It's pretty basic stuff. You can't just get rid of all those people behind the scenes. I don't know what they all think they're doing, but yeah, it's a weird thing. You know, as a little metaphor, when Arsenal sold Highbury, they couldn't build on the pitch because there's so many people's ashes scattered on it.
Oh, wow.
And it's classed as a kind of memorial garden now.
Yeah, of course.
And if you think of what a club actually is, it's an insane venture, really, that makes absolutely no sense. People kicking a pig's bladder around on a pitch and hoping for the best kind of thing. And we all pledge allegiance to the flag. It's not something you can get back out of. It's just completely not. I can't watch anymore. I mean, I end up... You'd laugh until the tears were running down your face if you could watch me watching a Man United game in my own sitting room. It's not a pretty sight. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to take my whole family to this survival of the shittest contest, this sort of this Europa League final. What does it mean if Tottenham and United are there?
Yeah.
But even there was a darkness to it. So yes, I went to the game. I thought my kids. I've taken them to two games, both unfortunately against. Well, Ivy's seen three. She's not seen them win yet. But they've not. Florence hasn't seen them score a goal yet. It was dark. But what can you do? You know, we love United. We do. I'll be there forever. I can't get out of it.
Which one of your current or past songs represents the state of Man United at the moment? Like, Please Forgive Me, maybe, or Hospital Food. Or maybe the Glazers need to the Glazers need to sail away.
The glazed over, yeah, double glazed. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. The whole world of football is so corporate and so up its own backside that it does make me feel quite sort of cynical and aggrieved sometimes. I long for the sort of sliding tackle and the terrible pitch you can barely kick a ball along. The sort of 70s and 80s loom up in my mind, but it was probably dreadful when you go back and watch it. So, I don't know what the answers are, but there's something badly wrong. And I think that you're not playing with just a football team and a brand. That's what I'm trying to say. There are ashes on the pitch.
Yeah.
There are people... There's a lot. My dad was there. He saw the last Busby Babes game. He was at the last Busby. When they died in that plane crash, it changed his life forever. He couldn't believe it. These were his heroes.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's mad, irrational stuff. And it's all bound in. And, like, he's taken me as a kid. I'm the sort of fourth generation to go. Now my kids are the fifth.
Yeah.
It's a mad thing to get involved in, isn't it? So yeah, these are dark times.
The ups and downs of football fandom. Well, listen, David, it's been a pleasure talking to you about everything and anything. I wish
I can't believe we got onto United there. That's totally below the belt. I've obviously got COVID. You caught me at a weak moment there.
I gotta get some good stuff out of you, man. David Gray's latest album, Dear Life, has been out for a good few months. If you haven't checked it out yet, get yourself a copy. And the INEC Killarney in Kerry, 27th and 28th of August, you will be welcome back to your homeland with open arms. We can't wait to see you back in Ireland.
I can't wait. We're going west.
Yeah.
To the real soul people, as Van said. We're going out to the real soul people.
Love it. David Gray, pleasure, sir. Thank you so much.
Cheers.